Art Mellor, president of Accelerated Cure Project. For multiple sources, come up, Art. Art Mellor graduated from MIT with a degree in electrical engineering and went on to work at three high-tech startups, and he co-founded three others. Following his diagnosis of MS in 2000, he and his neurologist co-founded the Accelerated Cure Project for MS, which was originally called the Boston Cure Project. You may have heard of Boston Cure. The Accelerated Cure Project is a national nonprofit dedicated to curing MS by determining its causes. They are creating a large-scale, multidisciplinary MS sample repository and a systematic plan to determine the causes of MS called the Cure Map. All yours, sir.
Hello. Well, everything that I prepared to talk about today has been talked about by different people, but all piecemeal. So I'll use this opportunity to pull all the pieces together into kind of a coherent picture. Basically, I get approached by many people with MS because I'm doing this organization that deals with people with MS, and they ask about LDN, and the conversation always finds its way around to the same thing. It's like, why isn't this out there? LDN appears promising, and we're all here because we'd like to see it get widespread acceptance. And there are still plenty of people who aren't able to get their doctors to write a prescription for LDN, and so they're not able to try it. And as we've been talking about, scientific credibility is an absolute necessity for most doctors to be able to go and write a prescription for you. And I'm going to argue that, and I'm going to agree with Skip, that the approach that I would recommend the community taking is one to go for get acceptance for off-label prescribing of the drug. Now, I'm going to come back over these points and fill in with details. I started out saying LDN appears promising, and I say appears promising because we have this huge amount of anecdotal evidence, but MS is largely a relapsing and remitting disease, so it can get better all by itself. Anecdotal evidence has the problem of being very selective. You tend to only hear positive anecdotal stories, and you rarely hear negative ones unless they're incredibly terrible. And LDN doesn't seem to do anything too badly to you, so we're not going to hear the negative ones. So, and also, as been demonstrated in many other drug trials, for some reason in MS, there's a larger than normal placebo effect. So given all these factors, but based on extensive anecdotal evidence, we need to trust but verify. We're going to need to have some proof, does this really work? And if we're going to do that proof, we all kind of have to be willing to believe the answer we get. So if it comes back and says, you know, there is no biological effect happening here, if the trial's been done properly, we kind of have to accept that. Now, I'll talk about in a little bit, there's a problem with the way clinical trials are done, which may make that result not apply to you. The widespread acceptance, and this got touched on a little bit in the last talk, I just wanted to point out, because this comes up every time I talk to somebody about LDN, I personally do not believe there is any conspiracy in the pharmaceutical industry to keep LDN off the market or to protect their MS franchise. And I say this because through my job, I regularly interact with pharmaceutical research and development people for the four MS drug companies. And when I bring up LDN, they go, huh? They haven't even heard of it. So while there may eventually become a conspiracy against LDN, I don't think there is one today because they're not even paying attention enough to know that it's out there. They're too busy protecting their billion-dollar franchise. The other thing that was talked about that I found that is interesting to consider is even though the drug is off patent, there are mechanisms to make a pharmaceutical company interested. One was mentioned, you can tweak the molecule so that you can get a patent on something different. And the thousands of other drugs that are prescribed off-label and are widely accepted are a good example of something that naltrexone could be. And I like to use steroids as an example. You have a relapse. Most people's neurologists rush you into the infusion center to pump you full of steroids, a drug which is not approved for use in MS. But it has had a considerable amount of trials done showing that there is some efficacy of use of steroids in subduing a relapse, and so they're perfectly willing to prescribe this. And after a while, it just becomes a cultural best practices, and the pharmaceutical companies that make it don't care that there isn't FDA approval. They can't advertise that their drug is good for MS, but everybody knows it is and buys it and uses it anyway. The other topic, and I don't know too much about this, and maybe some of the pharmacists do, but an approach, I don't know if it's possible, but there's over-the-counter. Drugs can become over-the-counter. And I believe there would need to be some amount of trial data to prove that it's safe and effective to make that happen with naltrexone, but that is a path that could be taken. So to get this scientific credibility, we need to move from anecdotal to something that's more rigorous. And that could start with case reports being done by reputable clinicians who are reporting on things that happen, and those get published and it gets more widely known. We're going to need a hypothesis of the mechanism of action, which Rob Lesser is going to talk about in a minute. There's one that has been put forth already. Just even doing a small pilot trial like we heard about is going to happen in the UK and in Mali. These trials can provide the evidence that off-label prescribing is not a career-limiting move if you're a clinician. Publication in a reputable journal of this trial will be necessary. So as we saw, Dr. Bayari did a trial and it didn't get published, and that kind of kills that path. FDA approval is a way to get a drug. It's expensive, it's complex, it's involved, it's the most rigorous, and I personally believe it is not necessary for a drug like this since it's already FDA approved for one indication. Off-label prescribing is a perfectly valid mechanism for getting a drug accepted in a wide circle. I'm going to also agree with Good Shape, and one of the points that I wanted to make is I think it's probably important to back off on the excessive claims of efficacy in so many diseases, even if it's true. That's going to set off the BS detector in most doctors' heads. Is there's too many quack medicines have come out and said, hey, this cures cancer and AIDS and diabetes and heart disease and everything, and then they just stop listening. And I think we stand the chance of having that happen with naltrexone if we push it that way. So having all the messages but keeping them separate is a good way to keep the word out there but not set off anybody's alarm. Now, just to talk about the trial, problem with trials that we have today. MS, I'm talking about MS in particular because that's my pet project. MS is a heterogeneous disease. It's probably not a single disease. It's a family of diseases, most likely. And when we do a trial in MS, we might be looking at 5-10 different diseases. So if you have a drug that is 100% effective in 3% of the population and not that effective in 97%, that drug will be deemed, by the way we do clinical trials today, a complete and utter failure and will never be looked at. And so The problem is if we do a trial and it turns out to be negative, there could be a subpopulation that has a type of MS or a genetic background that makes them respond incredibly well to it, and their doctors will say, well, it doesn't work in MS, and then they won't get it. So that's the problem with having the trial there if the results are negative. We're going to be breaking out into these sessions, and the Team 4 one is going to talk about one of my pet focuses for LDN. Making any of this happen all boils down to getting money. And the amount of money is not insane. As we've seen, it's on the order of $250,000 to do a reasonable trial. And it just takes the work to make that trial happen, and that work does not have to be done by some super scientist type. We've got examples here of two people who are not MDs who have caused trials to come about. We're doing a study, it's not a drug trial, but we're doing a study that requires IRB approval and everything, and we're not MDs. So I know it can be done, and it's just a matter of putting the work in and having a reasonable amount of money to do it. And so one of the topics that we'll be talking about is how do we get that money? Thank you.